Imagine for a second that consumer confidence is just hitting rock bottom, inflation is raging, and mortgage rates are spiking back up to a 9-month high.
Yeah, not a pretty picture.
Right. If you're looking at that economic dashboard, you would think the retail sector must be in an absolute death spiral.
You definitely assume that, yeah.
Yet somehow, against all conventional logic, a major retail brand just posted its best comparable sales numbers in 40 years. And billions of dollars in fresh institutional capital are like suddenly flooding back into the commercial market.
It is a massive disconnect.
It really is. So how does that math actually work? Welcome to the deep dive. We're stepping right into the current realities of commercial real estate.
There's a lot to unpack today.
There is. And before we start pulling apart the data, you should know this deep dive is brought to you by Eureka Business Group. They are your premier commercial real estate broker in the Dallas-Fort Worth market, specializing specifically in retail.
They really know that landscape.
Exactly. If you're underwriting deals, hunting for sites, or trying to, navigate the complexities of the Texas market, they're the boots on the ground you want in your corner.
Absolutely.
So today, we're taking a stack of late May 2026 market reports, earnings transcripts, regional news, and we're basically extracting the underlying mechanisms that drive these headlines.
And the headlines alone don't tell the whole story.
Right. We're looking at the paradox of consumer spending, why the Dallas-Fort Worth region is acting like this gravitational black hole for retail development, and how the debt markets are fundamentally restructuring themselves right now.
Well, we really have to start with the macroeconomic baseline, though. Because the environment investors are navigating right now, it seems completely counterintuitive if you just look at the surface level metrics.
Oh, for sure. The headwinds are undeniably stiff.
Yeah. I mean, we just saw the April personal consumption expenditures index, the PCE, come in running hot at 3.8% year over year.
Wow, 3.8. That's not what anyone wanted to see.
No, it's not. And core PCE, which, strips out volatile food and energy prices, is sitting stubbornly at 3.3%.
And that's the primary metric the Fed watches, right?
Exactly. It's the Federal Reserve's preferred inflation gauge. And it is just not cooling down the way the market hoped. To compound that pressure, the average U.S. long-term mortgage rate has climbed right back up to 6.53%.
Which is an absolute gut punch for consumer sentiment.
Totally. Surveys are plunging to record lows, entirely driven by cost of living anxiety. We're even hearing Federal Reserve officials, like Jeffrey Schmid from the Kansas City Fed, explicitly warning the market.
Warning them about what exactly?
That recent energy shocks are not a transitory blip. They're basically signaling to the capital markets to brace for a higher for longer debt environment.
Okay, so that is the exact disconnect I want to unpack here. If consumer sentiment is historically terrible and everyday borrowing costs are surging, people should be, snapping their wallets shut.
Right, that's the traditional expectation.
The traditional retail playbook says that in this kind of high inflation, high rate environment, brick and mortar storefronts just get crushed. But we're looking at real estate development pipelines and retail earnings that tell a completely different story.
They really do.
It feels like we are observing two totally distinct economic realities happening at the exact same time.
Yeah, and we are. We're observing what analysts are calling the retail paradox. The market hasn't just slowed down, it has severely bifurcated.
Bifurcated how? Like winners and losers.
Exactly. On one side of the split, you have discretionary spending and casual dining, which are taking a brutal hit. Consumers are hyper aware of their shrinking disposable income.
Right. So they're cutting out the middle tier luxuries.
Precisely. Well, we're seeing major restaurant franchisees facing mounting closures and outright corporate takeovers.
Yeah, I saw that. Brands like Applebee's and Jack in the Box are having to actively intervene to rescue distressed franchisee operations.
Yep. Because rising labor costs, food inflation, and a drop in discretionary foot traffic are just crushing their operating margins. But then on the other side of that split, you have necessity and off-price retail.
And they are not just surviving, they are thriving.
Exactly. Consumers haven't stopped spending entirely. They've just aggressively traded down.
Hmm.
They still need clothing, home goods, groceries, but they are now fiercely loyal to value.
The Q1 2026 earnings reports we're looking at really put a fine point on how lucrative that trade down effect is. I mean, for the right operators.
The numbers are wild.
They really are. Their bra stores reported a 17% increase in comparable store sales.
Which is just massive.
Right. Just to quickly define that for anyone, you know, outside the retail weeds, comparable store sales or comps, measure the revenue generated by locations that have been open for at least a year.
It strips out the revenue from brand new stores.
Exactly. So you can see if the core business is actually growing. And a 17% jump is staggering. It is the highest same-store growth in their entire 40-year corporate history.
That's unbelievable in this economy.
It is. They delivered an earnings per share of $2.02, completely blowing past Wall Street's expectations. And TJX Companies, which owns TJ Maxx and Marshalls, saw a 6% comp increase.
Pushing them to what, like $14.3
billion? Yeah, $14.3 billion in net sales for the quarter. Even Abercrombie and Fitch hit record Q1 net sales of $1.11 billion.
So to understand why those specific numbers are so high, you really have to look at the mechanics of the off-price business model.
Break that down for us.
Well, companies like Ross and TJX thrive on market dislocation. When traditional full-price retailers misjudge consumer demand and order way too much inventory, they have to liquidate it.
Right. They need to clear out their warehouse space.
Exactly. So the off-price brands swoop in, they buy those premium goods for pennies on the dollar, and stock their shelves. It creates this treasure hunt experience for the consumer.
Oh, yeah. The shopper feels like they're beating inflation by finding a high-quality item at a steep discount.
Yep. So while traditional department stores struggle with bloated supply chains, the off-price sector is turning that exact supply chain error into a high-margin cash machine.
That makes total sense. And when an asset class demonstrates that kind of durable, cycle-resistant cash flow, institutional real estate capital aggressively follows it.
Oh, absolutely. They chase the yield.
Right. If off-price and necessity retail are throwing off this much reliable cash, institutional investors aren't just going to sit on the sidelines. They need a physical place to park that money.
And reading through the takeaways from the recent ICSC Las Vegas conference, it is very clear where that money is going.
They are pointing a fire hose of capital directly at open-air centers.
Yes. For example, Continental Realty Corporation just executed a $200 million acquisition of 14 open-air shopping centers spread across 7 states.
Wow, $200 million.
Yeah, we're talking about over 2 million square feet of retail footprint. And if you look at the rent rolls, they are heavily anchored by names like Kroger and Ross Dress for Less.
So they're essentially betting that a grocery store and an off-price apparel retailer are the safest possible neighbors for your money right now.
Exactly. In a higher-for-longer interest rate environment, that's the play. And that capital flow brings us to the geographic reality of this trend.
Where is all this landing?
Well, if you map out where these institutional dollars are actually hitting, they are highly concentrated in the Sun Belt.
Which brings us right to Eureka Business Group's core territory.
Right. The Dallas-Fort Worth market. DFW is currently leading the state of Texas as the most active large market real estate story.
The pipeline data is crazy. It shows there are currently 7.2 million square feet of retail construction actively underway in DFW alone.
7.2 million. Developers do not break ground on that much commercial space unless the underlying demographic fundamentals make failure almost impossible.
So it's a sure bet, basically. And the infrastructure investments happening in those local municipalities really provide the blueprint for why that retail development is safe.
You really can't just look at the retail properties themselves.
Right. You have to look at how people are getting there. Take the McKinney National Airport expansion up in Collin County.
Oh, that's a perfect example.
They just approved a $7.6 million taxiway overhaul specifically to prepare for commercial airline service later this year. A city does not build commercial airport capacity unless the population density forces their hand.
No, they don't. And the U.S. Census estimates confirm this. They show that Collin County has added roughly 231,000 new residents since 2020.
That is wild. They recently ranked second nationally in pure numeric population growth.
And when you inject 250,000 people into a single geographic corridor in just a few years, you inherently create a massive vacuum for daily needs.
Right. Those people need groceries. They need haircuts, urgent care clinics, restaurants.
Exactly. And that vacuum is forcing a distinct evolution in how developers are building. We are seeing a shift away from traditional isolated suburban sprawl and a move toward highly curated, dense micro-cities.
Micro-cities. I like that.
Yeah, like in Frisco, for example, luxury rental developments like the Monarch are pushing much deeper into mixed-use programming.
So they're bundling apartments with retail.
Yeah, they're bundling high-end residential apartments with ground-floor experiential retail, premium dining, and boutique fitness concepts.
Makes sense. Renters paying top-of-market rates are going to demand that level of walkability right outside their lobby doors.
They absolutely demand it.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a crucial regulatory nuance happening at the municipal level that is making these mixed-use projects so valuable right now.
Okay, wait. It sounds like they are building terrestrial cruise ships, right? You have your luxury cabin, dining, groceries, entertainment, and you never actually have to leave the property footprint.
That's a great analogy, yeah.
But you mentioned a regulatory nuance. Are cities pushing back on this kind of density?
They are pushing back, but selectively. Pure multifamily development, meaning apartment complexes without a commercial retail component, is facing intense local opposition in many DFW suburbs.
Really? Just pure housing gets blocked?
Yeah. In Grapevine, the city council recently rejected a proposed Trammell Crow project specifically because residents and officials pushed back against adding more dense housing without a broader economic benefit.
Got it. So they want the tax revenue from retail.
Exactly. It highlights an increasingly difficult entitlement environment. If you just want to build apartments, cities are likely to say no. But if you integrate highly functional retail that serves the community and generates sales tax revenue, your path to approval is much smoother.
And that political dynamic makes existing well-placed retail sites incredibly valuable because new supply is just becoming harder to permit.
Precisely.
That intense focus on highly functional, necessity-driven spaces connects perfectly to the broader grocery-anchored boom we're seeing across the entire state of Texas.
Grocery is the undisputed anchor driving strip center investments right now.
It really is. If we look beyond just DFW, Phillips Edison recently acquired the fully leased Firethorn Plaza in Katy, Texas.
That's a great asset.
It sits right at the entrance of a master-planned community, capturing all that daily commuting traffic. Down in Houston, HEB is moving forward with a 99,000-square-foot Mi Tienda location, which is their Latino-focused store concept.
They're retrofitting space at the former Sharpstown Mall to make that happen, right?
Yes, exactly. And Sprouts Farmers Market is aggressively expanding its footprint, too, adding a new store in Webster. These are not isolated one-off leases.
No, they represent a unified strategy from major institutional players. They know that grocery foot traffic insulates the adjacent smaller tenants from economic downturns.
So if we synthesize this for you, the listener, the takeaway is pretty clear.
Very clear. If you're a retail investor underwriting a new acquisition or a tenant navigating site selection for your next storefront, the data proves that well-placed, necessity-anchored suburban retail in high-growth Texas corridors is the safest play available.
Because the foot traffic is insulated from discretionary pullbacks.
Right. Consumers will always prioritize groceries and basic services over luxury goods. Furthermore, the relentless population migration into these specific Texas markets provides a constant compounding tailwind for tenant sales.
Hold on, though, because looking at this from the developer's perspective brings up a major mathematical friction point.
The financing.
Yeah, the financing. We established earlier that the 10-year Treasury yield is stuck hovering around 4.0 to 4.25%. The cost of borrowing money is historically high relative to the easy money era of the last decade.
It's a completely different landscape.
Right. So how on earth is any developer making the math pencil out on a 7.2 million square foot pipeline in DFW right now? The margins on new development or major acquisitions get incredibly tight when your debt service is that expensive.
That brings us to the biggest surprise in the commercial debt markets over this late May window. The capital spigot, which had been virtually shut off, is finally flowing again.
Oh, really? Banks are back.
They're decisively back. After roughly 2 years of banks going pencils down on new deals to figure out what was happening with inflation, commercial real estate lending has reopened.
Do we have the numbers on that?
We do. In the first quarter of 2026, commercial real estate loan originations hit $455 billion. According to the Mortgage Bankers Association, that is an 80% year-over-year jump.
80%. That is massive.
Lenders have finally recalibrated their risk models to the new interest rate reality, and they are deploying capital again. But more importantly, we are seeing the definitive end of the extend and pretend era.
I want to break down extend and pretend because it has been the dark cloud hanging over commercial real estate since 2023.
It really has.
For years, when a commercial property owner couldn't refinance their debt because rates had spiked or their property value had dropped, banks would simply extend the maturity date of the loan.
Right. They pretended the asset was still perfectly healthy.
Exactly. Just to avoid officially realizing a massive financial loss on their own balance sheets. Are you saying lenders are finally ripping the band-aid off?
They are entirely ripping the band-aid off. Banks and institutional lenders are now actively cutting their losses.
Wow.
They are clearing out distressed underwater loans through discounted no sales and foreclosures. And surprisingly, this painful process is actually working to stabilize the broader financial system.
How do we track that stabilization?
We track it through the TREP CMBS delinquency rate. CMBS stands for Commercial Mortgage-Backed Securities, essentially bundles of commercial loans packaged together and sold to investors.
Got it.
By tracking the delinquency rate on those bundles, we can see how many property owners are missing their monthly payments. In April, that overall delinquency rate actually eased slightly down to 7.54%.
Oh, okay. So a slight drop indicates that the worst of the distressed debt is finally being processed and flushed out of the system rather than just piling up. So this is actually a sign of a healthy, maturing market cycle. We're finally burning off the dead wood, especially in obsolete sectors like older office buildings, to reset the baseline.
It's the financial equivalent of a controlled forest fire.
I love that. And once that bad debt is cleared out, it makes room for the fresh capital we are seeing deployed in retail and industrial.
The market is taking its medicine, and DFW provides the clearest real-time example of this clearing process. We're watching a stark contrast between extreme distress and premium capitalization happening in the exact same zip codes.
Give us an example.
On the distress side, you have assets like the Ritchie high-rise in Dallas heading to the auction block at a remarkably low starting bid. That is the dead wood being cleared out.
Right. The previous equity is wiped out, and it resets the financial basis for a future buyer who can afford to reposition the asset because they bought it at a steep discount.
Exactly. But right alongside that distress, the fresh capital is flowing heavily into premium stabilized assets.
Yeah, over in Frisco, the Hall Park development is confidently launching a new office tower as part of its $7 billion master planned redevelopment.
It's a huge project.
And in Dallas, an investment group called DFW Land just acquired a fully leased 120,000 square foot office property at the Shops at Park Lane.
And we cannot talk about DFW commercial real estate without looking at how the industrial sector interacts with retail.
Oh, absolutely. You cannot have 7.2 million square feet of new retail without the logistics infrastructure to supply those stores.
Nope. The industrial market remains a massive darling for institutional capital in North Texas. Provident Industrial just closed on a 1.5 million square foot portfolio in South Dallas.
And a 715,000 square foot warehouse site is actively moving forward in McKinney.
The capital is absolutely there. Lenders are just demanding flawless fundamentals and quality operators before they write the check.
When we piece all these distinct trends together, the strategy for navigating the rest of 2026 becomes pretty apparent.
It really does. The macroeconomic environment is undeniably tough. Inflation is stubborn, borrowing costs are elevated. But necessity retail, off-price apparel, and grocery-anchored centers are the undisputed kings of the current economic cycle.
They're thriving precisely because consumers are seeking value and prioritizing essentials.
And DFW stands out as the nation's premier landscape for this retail evolution, fueled by relentless population growth and major infrastructure investment.
And while debt is certainly more expensive than it was 3 years ago, the capital markets are functioning again. Banks are originating loans, and the market is healthily clearing out obsolete assets to make way for new growth.
So if you are operating in this space, having an expert navigator who understands these microtrends is critical.
Which again highlights Eureka Business Group's position at the forefront of these specific DFW retail opportunities. They understand the difference between a thriving grocery-anchored center in Collin County and a distressed office asset in the urban core.
It's vital local knowledge.
It is. But as we wrap up this deep dive, we have to look past the immediate horizon. All of this current resilience leads to a fascinating long-term consideration about where physical real estate is actually heading.
Because the data we review today paints a very strong picture for the immediate future of retail. But a recent research note from analysts at UBS introduced a highly sobering forecast for the end of the decade.
What are they projecting?
They project that despite the current strength we see in necessity and off-price sectors, the broader U.S. market could see more than 40,000 retail stores close over the next 5 years.
40,000. And to be entirely clear to you listening, we are strictly reporting the data points and economic projections presented by UBS in their research note. We aren't taking any political positions on the underlying policy.
Of course. UBS attributes this potential wave of massive store closures to a convergence of four distinct macroeconomic factors.
Walk us through them.
First, they cite the continuing structural pressure from e-commerce penetration. Second, the rapid emergence of AI-enabled shopping, which threatens to disrupt traditional consumer search and purchase habits.
Okay, those make sense on the tech side. What else?
Third, they point to the macroeconomic impact of prolonged tariffs altering global supply chain costs. And finally, they model the demographic effects of net negative immigration, which they project could shrink the overall baseline of the consumer population.
It is a highly complex web of future headwinds that every long-term institutional investor is having to factor into their 10-year modeling right now.
It serves as a critical reminder that commercial real estate is never static.
Right.
The success we are seeing in Texas necessity retail right now is a phenomenal case study in how markets successfully adapt to current inflation and interest rate pressures. But the underlying forces driving consumer behavior, technology, and capital flow are constantly shifting beneath our feet.
Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the realities of the commercial real estate market. We hope you take this intelligence, apply it to your underwriting, and leverage it to find an edge in your next major commercial real estate decision.
Stay ahead of the curve.
Absolutely. On behalf of Eureka Business Group, keep looking closely at the data, keep questioning the prevailing narrative, and we will leave you with this final thought to mull over. If 40,000 traditional storefronts actually do go dark over the next half decade, as those UBS analysts suggest, what entirely new category of real estate will rise up to take their place in the physical world?